is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us today. A very happy Black History Month to all of you. On the show today, we talk to Jomo Tariku, an Ethiopian-American artist and industrial designer whose work appeared in the Marvel superhero movie Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. Tariku talks to us about the concept of Afrofuturism and the ideas and themes that inspire his work.
Anything could be an inspiration as long as it is from the land of Africa. So I try to focus on architecture, hairstyles, colors, food, the landscape, the wildlife.
We also talked to Tanzanian filmmaker Honeymoon Aljabri about her new movie, Dodoma, and some of the challenges facing African filmmakers.
I try to get north, west, south, and central, and east. So that means the whole Africa, because I have casting from West Africa, Nigeria and Ghana, South Africa, Malawi.
But first, let's hear from you, our listeners. We asked our listeners in Ghana about the economic situation in the country and some of their ideas on what can be done to fix it.
Ghana's economy, the Akufo-Addo government has really failed Ghanaians. This time around, the economy, it's in a big mess because we can't even pay our utility bills. Our rents are high. We can't even feed our children, and it's disturbing. What I think the government should do is that they should have control over prices, especially they should go to the marketplaces. They should put in policies that will control our prices in the market, because people are really overpricing goods in the marketplaces. And I think some policies should be in place so that these goods would be checked.
The economy is actually not treating us well, not really treating us good, affecting business here and there, you know, clients complaining of high cost of materials and work and everything. It's really too bad. The government should look at the private sector, I think, because we have the majority. Those who are working for ourselves, the entrepreneurs and everything, they should invest more and stop too much borrowing. That's all I can say.
Many thanks to all of you for contributing your opinions to the show. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Marvel's Black Panther movies 1 and 2, both set in a fictional African country, have broken box office records. The first made over $1 billion at the box office, while the recently released sequel, Black Panther 2, Wakanda Forever, has made over $842 million so far at the global box office. But commercial success aside, the superhero movies, based off a comic strip, have become a cultural phenomenon steeped in the concept of Afrofuturism, which is defined as a cultural aesthetic that imagines a future where science fiction and the Black diaspora intersect. And the popularity of the franchise has amplified the debate that there needs to be more diversity and representation of African culture in the global film industry. Jomo Tariku is an Ethiopian-American artist and industrial designer who created some of the furniture featured in the movie. His work can also be found in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York and the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. He joins me today in studio at the Voice of America to talk about the inspiration behind his designs and the need for representation in the global design industry.
My journey started maybe 30 plus years earlier. I ended up studying industrial design, and as part of your industrial design, you have to do a design thesis. And I selected to do how to come up with a method for creating a modern line of African furniture, and not be completely back then, not to be focused in creating one of a kind, but how you would actually develop a series of set of furniture pieces that you can make and, first of all, design and make. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did this was because back in 92, 93, I already have noticed that we were not represented in the market. in the general home decor market when it comes to African based design. If any, would mostly be focused towards what Europeans would be thinking, what African design is, masks and animal prints. I always like to say that there's nothing wrong with those. It's just that us being
we need to be part of the conversation.
People,
yes.
Our contribution is not only these things and not the European and reinterpretation of those things.
Right, right. Where do you draw your inspiration for your furniture in terms of concepts, ideas, themes?
I draw my mostly from sub-Saharan Africa, and I try my best not to only focus on pre-existing traditionally made furniture pieces. Again, part of my thesis argument was anything could be an inspiration as long as it is from the land of Africa. So I try to focus on architecture, hairstyles, colors, food, the landscape, the wildlife. Anything that piques my interest ends up on my sketch pad as a potential launching pad for coming up with new ideas.
Mm. Now, I've seen some of your work and a couple of them looked familiar. For example, the stool, the Ashanti stool.
Yes.
and the comb. You know, what draws you to these objects? Is it the when you're thinking about reimagining them or reinterpreting them,
yeah,
are you drawn because of their history, their background, like the significance in culture, or is it because of the design aesthetic?
All of them. I mean, I grew up, my father was an avid historian. He loved to read books about history, and it didn't matter from which part of the world. So things like that, and just by the mere fact of, you know, when we were growing up, you'd be considered lucky if at home you had what back then was volumes of encyclopedia, you know, A to Z. And we had those. Those were where if I...
That's the modern-day internet, so
yeah,
modern-day
exactly.
Google or social media.
Yeah, these are things that I would flip through and look at mostly, unfortunately. And this is, I think, should have been an indication that I'm a visual person.
Yeah.
I would mostly look at the pictures, where they're from. And that kind of carried over into these things that I do. So the Ashanti or the Afro hair pick, I mean, these are like, these are objects that... You know, even in passing, you see them and they tend, at least from my angle,
striking.
It's very striking.
Mm.
So it's not only about the historical significance and what they mean, it's just also those organic shapes that I've grown up with, even though we've never had an Ashanti stool.
Mm.
You know, once I saw that in a book, that's been like...
it was ingrained into your brain. Yeah.
My brain.
Yeah.
I never got a chance to reinterpret it my way, so where I can put my signature while respecting where I got the idea. And always I name my designs, the final designs, after the things that inspired me, because I want people who don't know, and I've run into Ghanaians, they make the connection.
Mm. So you want it to be a gateway into the culture?
Yes.
Into the larger culture, right?
Not only for Africans, but for everybody. Because you might not know what an
right.
Ashanti stool
absolutely.
Is if you're... Let's say from
East Africa. Yeah. And what is it like to be a black industrial designer in terms of the marketplace of ideas and products? Mm-hmm. How open is the design industry to people like yourself?
It hasn't been open. There is still a struggle. There's not that many of us practicing, and doors are finally opening. I want more people from the continent of Africa and the diaspora and from here to actually look into industrial design as one way to not only make a living, but also to put their own interpretation and contribution into the design canon. And yes, things are changing. Yes, we're contributing. We're adding to the design canon, but recognition has been lacking. And finally, I think we're making headway.
Is this the moment you think it's... Do you think... I mean, so some of... We've seen movements come and go.
Yes. And I agree with you. We have to be a bit cautious about this. Because, like you said, you have to be careful that it's not a fad.
Yes.
Are the museums collecting African art and design into the fad of okay, let's collect few from few designers like me.
Mm.
And once they hit, you know, super saturation, from their perspective, they just walk away.
Mm.
So that's where the advocacy of, you know, groups like I'm part of the Black Artists and Designers Guild consistently
to sustain the momentum.
It has to be sustained
mm.
because our contribution is consistent. It needs to be moving forward. There's more of us coming behind us. There are people, even though I said there might not be many of us, how do I know? Maybe there's more of
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
You know, so we have to reach out, bring people into the fold and promote their contribution and not only us.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I'm chatting with Jomo Tariku, an artist and industrial designer behind some of the set pieces featured on the blockbuster Black Panther Wakanda Forever movie. Jomo Tariku joins me in studio here at the Voice of America.
Have you collaborated at this point with any of the artisans, whether in these different cultures, different mm-hmm. spaces, different countries that have actually contributed to making these original arts? Have you thought about...
I have, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, it might be because of the length of time it's taken me to build my own career, the 30-year journey that has not materialized. It's not because I haven't thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reaching out, making connections in Rwanda. That didn't pan out partially because of, I couldn't travel at one point.
Logistics.
Yeah, logistics, income, and all these family responsibilities. But it's always at the back of my mind. So at a minimum, my goal is to participate in few design events within Africa and contribute into that. And I've participated in Accra, Lagos, and obviously in Addis.
Mm.
And I try my best to at least to stay connected, even though I've been making my living in the U.S.
Right. Afrofuturism, how would you define it in terms of furniture design? And what are some of, misconceptions of what a black furniture or black industrial designer should be?
I don't know if... I don't think there is a huge... The great thing, at least from the way I understand Afrofuturism, is open for any perspective from the black experience, be it from the continent of Africa, the Caribbean, the U.S., Europe, wherever we've settled and where our ancestors have moved on. It's just a marriage of, you know, it's future-looking, but also a respect to what our ancestors have done in the past. And merging it in, you know, my design principle have been following this, even when I didn't know what Afrofuturism was. And
right.
I said, you know what, I do fit in here. I have a space in the Afrofuturist.
That's recognizing the things that inspire us from the past without even really knowing what is it that is inspiring you. But our ancestors, I guess, have created, pathways for us. In
they have.
Whether it's art. Yeah.
For me, when I see handmade tools and objects and craft, it just fascinates me. And I keep on trying to pass this on to other designers that we really need to give respect for these people. Unlike me, who using the Western method of branding yourself, you know, Jomo as a designer, the people who created the Ashanti stool and all the other objects never put down their name.
Mm.
They never signed the bottom. They never tried to get on a magazine. Their goal was not that. Their goal was partially to create utilitarian objects and give it back to their community. So as things have progressed, branding and that concept came in, and now I am one of those beneficiaries of these things. And I think I have to acknowledge that contribution more than, you know, the popular question to most designers and artists and musicians is, who's your favorite designer or who's your favorite artist or whatever, and you name another contemporary. I have other contemporaries that I love. But when I'm given the stage like this one, I prefer to say the people that I don't know them.
The unknowns
yeah. that I have really are the reasons why I have this career, that I can say Africa played a role into what I'm doing now. I prefer to raise that, you know, my arms to them and say, You've done the hard work. I'm just passing the torch
right.
this day.
Let's talk about your involvement with Black Panther. How did that happen? How did that come by?
I don't want to say involvement. But, the studio reached out. Simple email, if I remember right, was we want to use your work as part of a stage design for a movie. Kind of a very...
Did you ask them how did you find me?
Well, initially, I'm seeing that, and I've received emails where people, where movie productions and ads have wanted to use my work for staging. So I didn't think it was a
big deal.
But, you know, sitting on at dinner same night, like a few hours later, I'm talking to my wife, and I say, hey, the email has MCUstudios.com without recognizing MCU stood for Marvel Cinematic Universe. And my son quickly caught that and said, oh, wow, that has to be, can only be Black Panther.
Yeah.
What else? So I had to run and reply, and obviously in follow-up emails, they said, we want to use some of your work, and they ended up using 14 of my work in various spots. I just want to make sure I am one of many designers' work that they've used just to.
But your designs are quite important, and I look at your pieces and it feels like it was created by somebody who's involved in that project.
Well, in a weird way, I don't want to say it's a premonition, but I remember I was at a State Department event where I was one of the speakers, and the MC said, this guy does, I was there for a data science related presentation, but as part of my bio, he said, and he does furniture, and, you know, he kind of, and it just said, so would you do furniture for Black Panther? And I kind of said,
wow.
Yeah, I would. And,
that was how many years before that?
That was maybe 5-6 years ago. I was still at World Bank. And again, when my Niala chair, then D'Amido, was selected by the Met, and I found out the designer of that Afrofuturist period room that they were putting together was being designed by Hannah Bickler of Black Panther, I said, you know what, to my furniture guy who builds my chairs, I said, I would be surprised if one of our work doesn't end up
in the stars aligned.
Yeah, the
aligned, Thank you so much for taking time to chat with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
You had a great.
That was Jomo Tariku, an artist and industrial designer behind some of the set pieces featured on the blockbuster Black Panther Wakanda Forever movie. You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The economy is really bad. Things are expensive, like transportation fees. We can't even afford food. Yeah. The government should stop building the cathedral and use that money to build the one district, one factory. Because even now, there are so many nurses that they have not been posted. Things are really expensive in this country, so the cathedral should be cancelled and he use that money to build the one they should want for you, so that the unemployment will be employed.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Now, from Nollywood to Hollywood, the African film industry is one of the fastest growing industries in the world, bringing in billions of dollars in revenue each year. Now, even though many African film production budgets are small compared to their Western counterparts, the movies are both dynamic and vibrant, and they contribute significantly to the global film landscape. Honeymoon Aljabri is a Tanzanian filmmaker whose roles include writing, producing, and directing documentaries and feature films. She talks to me about her new movie, Dodoma, which boasts of a cast that represents much of the continent, and how, even as they struggle to find financing, African filmmakers strive to tell the stories that are unique to Africa and that resonate with audiences both within and outside the continent.
Dodoma is a film about love and loss, and it's just right time for these two lovers. They soulmate, but they couldn't get to be together because of timing. And the movie is shot in Mafia Island. It's a beautiful island in Tanzania, and the cast and crew are all over Africa.
So you said earlier that this is one of the first films that has a cast that is representative of the whole continent.
Yeah, because I try to do to get north, west, south, and central, and east. So that means the whole Africa, because I have cast from West Africa, Nigeria and Ghana, South Africa, Malawi, Central Africa, Kenya.
Was that intentional Tanzania. On your part, or that you wanted to make a quote-unquote Pan-African movie?
Yeah, yeah. That was the first thing I wanted. I was like, I will find the best of each country that I was aiming, like each part of the continent. So I got South Africa, this lady called Tumi Moroke. She's a big comedian in South Africa, and the second girl was from New York, but she's South African. Her name is Nono.
When did you shoot the film?
We shot it in May.
Okay,
yes.
That's during the pandemic. How difficult was it to make the film during the pandemic?
Oh, it's very difficult because, like, you had to eliminate a lot of things to be able to get the permission to film. So had to film with less crew as much as we can, because we are not allowed, like, to have a lot of people at the same place. So we made a lemonade from the lemons we had.
Mm. Did that affect the quality of the film? Or do you feel like you were able to have a final product that was reflective of the effort, but also captures the story quite well?
Yeah, it captured everything that I wanted. You know, like, human are flexible. Like, if you tell, like, we have three people, they'll be like, oh, we have three people, then they can divide that job with three people. But when you say, hey, this job can be done and we have two people, and that's what happened. Like, hey, we want to make this, and I think we are all able of doing it. We can just push a little bit. Maybe we can add 1 hour of doing it, or we can try to do as much as we can to get done according to the time, the place, what we had.
No, everybody's putting in extra effort to make sure
yes.
that this works out, even if
yes.
you're working with a smaller crew.
Yes.
And who are you targeting with this film? Who is your target audience?
My target audience is Africans and diasporas. I feel like we as African, we have to tell our own stories, because if we don't, somebody else will. And if when they do it, they'll tell a different story, the way they perceive African or they think Africa we are. Like this new movie about Viola Davis, about the women hero, it's a little bit contradiction, because we let other people tell our own stories. That's what my fear is. Like, Africans, we have been letting people acknowledge and write our history, and we are laid back and look or read from the people who we don't know or they think they know us. So that my ambition is to, like, to collaborate with African or Pan-African to create something that will speak our name, will acknowledge our efforts, and will make us our heroes, our sheroes.
The heroes of our own stories.
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's talk about you as an independent filmmaker. What are some of the challenges that you face as an independent African filmmaker?
Usually I say I start with, like, three strikes. I'm a female African, and in this world of film, like, a lot of directors we know, they're men, white males, that they really, you know, stand still in this industry. So it's very hard for people to believe in women, especially African women. And, like, even Netflix itself, like, I had the first film. They didn't want to take it because they say I am from East Africa, and they didn't take East African content then. So I had film, and I didn't know where to take it. And, like, it's not like I have funds from, like, maybe organization. It's like my work. I work, I get money, I save, and I create things. Because I believe, like, I want to tell African story, and I will keep putting my face right there until they will believe me one day and be able to get funded. Because I tried in Tanzania. I even used their products, like Serengeti beer, but I asked them for sponsorship. They didn't want to give to me. So, like, Tanzania, I got zero sponsorship. And usually they say it's hard.
Do you feel that if you were, like, a male, female, sorry, if you were
a man who is going to them for these funds, it would have been easier for you if you were a white male to look for money.
Definitely. Like, I know, like, our culture in Tanzania right now, if a white male from Hollywood go to Tanzania and talk to those beer company or, like, sugar company or any company that will have to advertise in the film, in heartbeat, they'll say yes. I saw so many times foreigner come to Tanzania and they get sponsorship, they get funds and everything, and people, they round around them to cheer them, their work. Because they're just from abroad, and
if they have something to offer.
Yeah.
But that has not stopped you from making your movie. You're saying you're using your own personal resources to make these stories, to create these stories, because you understand the importance of the stories. What advice would you give to an upcoming filmmaker, young female filmmaker that looks at your movies and is like, you know, I want to be like Honeymoon one day, create these movies, make these stories, and tell you these stories?
I think start to create. Create with whatever you want, however you want, whenever you want, just keep creating. Because I believe this, if you wait to get a real fund, you get a lot of millions. That doesn't come easy. But nowadays, the life has become very easy for filmmaker. You can use even an iPhone to film something. Start to create before you feel like, you know, sometimes we think like, oh, I want to be a filmmaker. Don't think that you want to be a filmmaker. Be a filmmaker. Start to create. Mm. If you want to be a writer, start to write now. Just keep writing. You like, this script I wrote 7 years ago. So I have like 25 of the scripts in my computer. Like, wherever I feel age of writing, I write. And I feel like, okay, one day I'll get money to produce this film, I'll produce. So if you want to be a filmmaker, if you're a writer, start to write. If you are a content creator, start to create content. And no is not a word. Just keep pushing.
Keep pushing. Keep.
Yeah, because it's your dream. It's either you work on your dream or somebody else's dream. We only have two options in this world.
Honeymoon, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, brother.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all of you for tuning in. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms at VOA Upfront on Instagram and on Facebook. Until next time, let's connect again right here on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, everyone.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best. Yes, sir.
NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.